Movie Buff Specialist Phil and John are back with another film review here of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and of something that came out recently. Wasn't this weekend. I'm a masochist, but I'm not going to go sit through the Eras Tour. And I hate to say this, but like, I'm not a Taylor Swift hater at all. But man, we talked about this a couple times on this podcast. It's just gotten to the point of ridiculousness. My goodness. Yeah. I went and saw Saw 10 and I saw it. I made the mistake of seeing it last Friday at about 5 o'clock, I think was my showtime. The amount of teenagers that were sprinting in and out of the movie theater for Saw 10 because their Eras Tour time had not started yet. They were just running in and out of the theater and making noise and being obnoxious. I get it. Like, teenagers are annoying. That's what teenagers do. But also, I was just like, man, this theater is swarmed. It's a theater I go to every week now because after the snoring man at Oppenheimer, I stopped going to that theater and I went to a different one. Have had no problems at all. The Eras Tour brought out the worst. And all I could think watching the Saw Traps, and I put this in my Letterboxd review, but all I could think looking at the Saw Traps was, man, they have it easier than any dad who just got dragged to the Taylor Swift Eras Tour on opening night, because what a nightmare that looked like.
I don't know. I actually avoided the theater I would have saw 10 at is like a local theater, so it didn't have the Eras Tour playing at it, that the Eras Tour was playing across the street at the other theater. I didn't have to deal with the swarms of teenage girls going to see that movie.
It wasn't just teenage girls, man. It was teenage boys. No, it wasn't. Too. The teenage boys were definitely the more annoying. I have to say that too.
I have to imagine the millennials were all there too. Everyone our age was probably there. Everyone was there because it made $96 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, you know, we talked about this with Barbie early on. If you haven't listened to the Barbie episode, go listen. I talked about it with Barbie. Anybody who's going to try to capitalize off this is going to fail. Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift. A lot of other, I saw a Dave Matthews Band version of this back in like 2009, 2010. This is not, I know Beyonce is doing one. Yeah. This is not going to sustain. Maybe Beyonce's makes $40 million. Nobody is going to get one that's going to make what Taylor Swift did. And after Taylor Swift and Beyonce, there's nobody big enough that you can do this with.
It's very clear that studios are just at a point where they're running out of material to release that they'd want to release without promotion from actors. Yeah. That's just what it's coming down to. This is the second major concert movie that's come out recently, because the Talking Heads one came out last month, which is supposed to be really good. I haven't gotten around to watching it yet, but I've heard it's fantastic. And like you said, the Beyonce one's coming out in December, but December is also the time when like we're supposed to have good movies coming out again. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Is the Eras Tour still playing even, or did it stop?
It is playing here for the next 4 weeks.
But it's only on weekends.
I believe so.
Because like where in the U.S. at least, it's not playing during the week. It's not part of the dailies or anything like that.
No. So I'm pretty sure it's only on weekends, which is unfortunate because it's taking away the time slots for movies that I tend to see on weekends, which is like those special screenings of things, right? Like the anniversary screenings.
Yeah.
Things like that, right? Speaking of Studio Ghibli, we have a release date for the last one.
I know. So, but it's not for a little bit, right?
It's December 8th.
Yeah, so it's not that far out.
That's not that far. But like, all those type of special screenings, because, like, The Evil Dead 2 was supposed to be screening at my local theater this weekend. Did it? No, Taylor Swift did instead.
Yeah. No, I hear it. Can you hear that?
No.
Okay, good. My sprinklers just turned on, and I have my window open, because down here in South Florida, it's 73, 72 degrees, getting into the 60s tonight. So anytime you cannot use the air conditioning here, you got to do it, because you use it 9 to 10 months out of the year. So, but yeah, I'm curious to see what'll happen this weekend with Killers of the Flower Moon. Obviously, this is a tough movie to make money.
Yes.
From a couple different perspectives, right? One is that it's an Oscar movie. They generally don't make as much, but it's 3 hours and 26 minutes long. And so being 3 hours and 26 minutes long, there's only so many show times you can have. And with the Eras Tour still being out, with it being Halloween time, so you're still going to be having, you know, Saw 10 and The Exorcist Believer still going in theaters, it does not leave much room for this movie. So the show times are weird all around. Mm-hmm. But I have faith in it. I think that especially in the cities, people are really going to turn out for this, and I think it'll do well. It's going to get all the Oscar hype in the world. 3 hours and 26 minutes is tough, but I mean, I like long movies. I'm not worried about it. I'm more just saying from a perspective of that. I don't really know what it's tracking at, but I am curious because I don't think the Eras Tour is going to make $92 million again. I think that if you didn't see it opening weekend, you're kind of not one of the cool kids, right? That's what it feels like a little bit.
I feel like this is the type of thing that you have people repeat going to, though, so it might.
God, people got to find something to do, huh? Do yeah, I sound like a bitter old man? Because I want little. To.
Yeah.
Good. Good. All right. Anyway, so we're talking about Saw 10, and we're also going to talk about Ant-Man. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie was $200 million, and its opening weekend range is 30 to 42 million.
That's pretty low.
That is pretty low. It's weird, though, because they have to know that with how they're releasing this movie, because it's Apple, they can't really, they couldn't have been expecting it to make $200 million in theaters, right?
I think Oscar buzz movies make money in February and January.
That's true, because it'll get re-released.
It's the re-release after the holidays. That's when people go see them.
Yeah, and that I think that's a really good point. And yeah, the Eras Tour is looking to get about 30 to 40 million for its second weekend, and this is targeting 20 to 30 million in its debut. And then it ends at the streaming service and all that. And so, I mean, this is going to be a movie that'll make money for Apple, because anybody who misses it in theaters, this is the type of movie I think people would subscribe to Apple for a month or 2 months to watch. So it'll make its money in its own unique way. That is the movie we're doing next week. So, you know, we'll be talking about it. I already have my tickets for tomorrow, 2:30 PM. Can't wait. But anyway, let's talk about Saw 10. I have seen the first Saw, the second Saw, the third Saw. I think is the fourth Saw where John Kramer gets his head cut open and he's laying on the table and they pull out like his brain and stuff. The whole opening is they're dissecting him. Is that the fourth Saw?
I wish I could tell you. I've only seen the first Saw.
Okay, so I think that's the fourth one. That's the last one I've seen until this one. This was an interesting movie.
It was.
This was an interesting movie. Everything we complained about for The Exorcist Believer last week, Saw 10 had every right to do, and it didn't do it. Yeah. I kind of enjoyed it. I didn't get the ending at all. I want to talk about the ending. I really don't get it.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I really enjoyed this. 2.5 stars. Might not sound like a movie I really enjoyed. I don't necessarily like watching people cut their legs off and have their heads cut off and you know, have their eyeballs sucked out and get hit with radiation and stuff. Like, it disgusts me. I don't go for the torture porn genre. It's not for me. But the buildup in this movie was really good. The story was good. Like, I bought that Jigsaw was like, it was a revenge movie instead of just being Jigsaw's an asshole.
Yeah, and it's even framed in a way where it doesn't feel like a generic revenge movie either. And it does feel like this movie does such a good job at making you root for someone you know is the villain from the very moment it starts.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating what this movie does with like character work, how it builds a sympathetic character, how it sustains a sympathetic character as they do horrendous things to people.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think what's funny is we have such a relationship at this point with Jigsaw and Tobin Bell playing the role and all of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is what it is. This was the first time where I really felt like, you know what? Good. All the other movies that you watch, even the first Saw, it is such a stretch. And he really is torturing people.
Yeah,
he really is. This one, it was kind of like, man, these people are robbing people blind. They're taking advantage of the weakest in society and they know that they won't get caught and they have no problem doing it. So why should I feel bad that they're now being tortured and killed and whatever it is? At the beginning, when the guy goes to steal a watch and he's about to suck his eyeballs out and break his fingers, I was like, don't know if that's necessarily warranted, but it was like you felt like, okay, you knew what you were getting into, but for the first time, you really felt like, there's a purpose to what I'm watching, even more of a purpose. The first Saw has a purpose and it's a cool story in a very, you know, in a very 2000s way and very grungy and gross and whatever. This one felt like the type of revenge thriller that we used to get around Halloween time.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, I don't know what to really compare it to, but yeah, it feels like this, it feels like a very typical movie we get with that Saw flair. And even then, like, the traps weren't as intricate as I would have thought they would be. It felt like, because of the setting of the film, it felt a lot more improvised than you would expect. And I don't think there's one trap in this that's like super memorable. Like, we don't have like a reverse bear trap in this movie. However, I feel like the escalating game worked really well. Again, I'm not a big into the torture porn genre either. But at the same time, and like, you know, I'm like wincing as people are like cutting their own legs off and everything. But at the same time, there's just enough character work in this movie to make it really compelling. And making this, these villains just like common criminals who have zero remorse really propelled it a lot higher than just a generic Saw sequel.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it what really shocked me the most about this movie is the first half hour.
Yeah.
While I was watching it, I turned to myself, you know, in a very office style, and I looked at the camera and I was like, this is a real movie.
Yeah.
They actually made a real movie, and it's not perfectly made. It's it's well made. It's not very well made. It's well made. It's good, you know. But they went for it, and they really tried to make a real movie. And you know, during that opening was when the children were running in and out of the theater and stomping their feet and doing what teenage boys do to try to get attention. I mean, I get it. And it didn't bother me because I also was watching a Saw movie. I wasn't watching Oppenheimer. If I go to Killers of the Flower Moon tomorrow and children start running through the theater, yeah, that's going to be different. But I really was appreciating what they were doing. Even if I didn't necessarily always like it, the fact that they took their time and they showed the story of John Kramer and they didn't go for the fake jump scare type things. You could tell that the studio said you have to put in the eyeball thing. That needs to happen because otherwise we're going 45 minutes of this movie without a Saw trap. That just cannot happen. But the fact that that was it and they showed him and it was like, yeah, good choice. That was kind of funny. It was a nice little wink to the audience and you got your whatever. And man, the whole buildup of going to get the treatment and going to the different programs and things and getting everything done. And then the discovery that he had been played, that's a first act of a movie. What the hell did I just watch? I was so confused, but I appreciated it so much. So good for them. You know, I cursed out the writers for Exorcist Believer last week. For the writers of Saw 10, good for you. Like, well done. That's commendable. And it's appreciated more than they're probably even going to realize.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I really wonder how like those steadfast fans of this franchise feel.
Oh, I can tell you.
Oh, you can?
I can, but go ahead. You go first, and then I'll tell you.
Because it does feel like, I mean, obviously, there's the fact that, like, I'm pretty sure John Kramer died at one point in the franchise.
He does. That's what I said. He's getting his head cut open in the fourth one.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still here. He's still going. We still have Amanda working with him.
She is such an actress. Man.
Whew. Yeah.
She can't act. Okay. Continue. Yeah.
But it's just this idea of, like you said, that buildup, right? John Kramer is so vulnerable in the beginning of this movie and is just in this state where it's like, we, and it's kind of like that bit of like dramatic irony, I guess is the best way to put it, where like we, the audience, see him sitting in this like cancer support group and everyone there is like talking about their cancer and everything. And he's obviously done this as well. And everyone's looking at him as like this human who is dealing with adversity and everything. And we know as an audience, this is one of the most notorious serial killers in the world in this universe. Like, this is a really bad guy, but it's still built up in a way where you're rooting for him. You want him to get the surgery. You want him to continue. And maybe that's the sadism inside of us who just want to see Saw traps and stuff continue. And we know that if he dies, that we don't still get that. maybe it's just the fact that Tobin Bell's performance in this movie is really good.
Yeah, and Tobin Bell's always been an underappreciated actor. If you haven't seen Mississippi Burning, that's a movie that I really love, and he has a small part in that, but he's very good in it. And he's just underappreciated because then, I mean, yeah. But good for him. I mean, he's laughing his way to the bank. So let me give you my viewing experience for this movie. Okay. Walked in. So I live in South Florida, so it's a very heavy Hispanic population. And I walked in, and in my row, there were two, like, I want to say like 40-year-old Hispanic women in the middle. And they were sitting there eating their popcorn, talking, you know, they were talking really loud before the movie and everything, which is fine. I don't care. And they're talking really loud and they're doing whatever. And as the movie starts, they're you know, you can hear them kind of like moping. And when the eyeball thing happened, they go, oh, here we go. Here we go. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, these look like two moms who like left their kids are at school or they're going out for their Friday night movie while dad's got the kids today instead. And then when they started torturing people, they were screaming with joy, not with fear, with joy at this movie, right? They were so stoked that it was finally happening. And in back behind me, there was like a family of just like four with, you know, the teenage son and daughter and then the mom and dad. And when they started torturing, they're screaming with joy, like laughing as these people are cutting their legs off. Which, what else can you really do, right? Because it is so ridiculous.
Sure.
But there was such a joy in that theater while all of this was happening, as messed up as that might be. And it didn't matter if you were the family of four or the two Hispanic moms out for your Friday night movie. Everybody was waiting for that stuff. So while I sat there and really appreciated the first half hour, I think they were bored to tears and were wishing that movie was 90 right. minutes long and that first half hour was somehow chopped up into a tape recorder where he said, you know, I want to play a game because you tortured me. And they did a couple quick flashbacks. So that's what I got from it. But at the end of the day, this is my second favorite Saw movie out of the four or five that I've seen.
It's also my second favorite Saw movie, but that might be cheating.
Yeah, well, that is cheating, John.
I'm glad you mentioned flashbacks, though, because I thought it was the weakest part of this movie.
The flashback at the end made no sense. Can I just say that?
It wasn't a flashback at the end.
What do you mean it wasn't a flashback?
Like, are you talking about the post-credit scene?
No. I didn't even stay for the post-credit scene. I had to look that up after. No, I'm talking about when he's going through all of the, you know, when they start playing the song, you know, and he's going, yeah, I got you, you know, I trapped you, whatever. You realize that it's all part of his plan. I don't understand how a lot of what happened in that last scene was actually part of his plan.
I think it was just an anticipation of the fact that they knew that Parker was in on it.
No, I think I agree with that.
We know that because
it felt like there was just so much. There were so many gotchas in that final speech that I just felt like didn't really make sense. And they kept showing the flashbacks of like how it was a gotcha. And I'm like, huh? Wait, where's the gotcha there? I don't understand. And then I'm very confused at the end. Does she die or does she live?
The doctor?
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, cool. Because like I know that was meant to be left open to interpretation. But I was I just was very confused by the ending of this movie. It lost me a lot at the end. And I felt like it wasn't as smart of a gotcha. And it almost felt like they just threw it in because the studio said, you have to have this moment.
Perhaps. I mean, there was never a point where I felt like John Kramer was going to lose.
No, of course. I mean, well, he couldn't lose because this takes place between the first and second one, and he's doing fine in the second one.
Does it? Is this a movie that takes place at that point?
Yeah, this takes place after the first one, before the second one. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And that also is why I think the traps aren't as elaborate as you thought they might be, because he's still kind of in his baby stages.
I mean, he still had a reverse bear trap already by this point.
He did, but this is still, you know, he's in his baby.
On Amanda.
Yeah. Well, that was that in the first movie, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Wait, then how does he have this, like, second detective helping him in the post-credit scene?
I don't know. I didn't watch the post-credit scene.
Okay.
And I almost,
I was moving out, I was walking out of the theater, and then it started playing, and I was like, oh, I should probably watch this.
Yeah, because Saw also, 2. Like, go ahead.
Part of it is also in the trailer for this movie.
Okay.
Like, from this post-trailer scene is in the trailer.
Yeah. 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 I mean,
the post-credits scene is exactly what you expect it to be, right? It's just him torturing the guy back in the States.
Yeah, no, I know. It's the guy who claimed he had been cured.
Henry, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, as far as I know, it takes place between the first and second one.
That would make sense chronologically.
Yeah.
With the whole cancer of it all.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know. Either way, I think it felt good. I felt like the rudimentary of the traps was just based on like the improvisation of making traps in Mexico without supplies. Mm-hmm. Even then, some of them were pretty elaborate. Like the teeter-totter, that was pretty elaborate for like making it up on the spot.
Hey, the teeter-totter, though, you were using what you had. I mean, go watch like some of the later ones, and I know that's when it becomes more of Amanda doing it. She's like the protege who does it. It gets to the point where you're like, yeah, they can't even survive these traps even if they wanted to, and now they're just dying in these insanely graphic ways. I mean, the Saw movies really are so one of a kind.
Yes.
In what they do, they're very bizarre. I mean, they're just wild.
They are. But I also appreciated that it kept there's one thing that I always associate with Saw, and it's this like those fast zoom-ins
mm-hmm.
that we get during the torture scenes. I've like said this on both of my reviews of Saw on Letterboxd. It feels like the original Saw feels like it's cut together, like one of those old anti-piracy ads.
Yeah, you wouldn't steal a car.
Yeah, those ones.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, and like there are scenes, they still do it in this movie. And it made me so happy when it started happening. I'm like, yes, we still feel like 2004 mm-hmm. at some times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I you know what it is with the Saw movies? For as graphic and ridiculous as they are, there is still an artistic sense to them. And it sounds a little ridiculous, but they know what their audience is looking for. They know what they're trying to make. They know the direction they want to go. They know what their characters need to do. They're creative. I mean, they really do put a lot of effort into these movies. Now, I stopped watching after the fourth one, so I don't know if there's effort after that one. But especially in the first two, because the second one has some really clever ideas. There are some really good moments in that movie. And so, like, I do respect that. And I think that's why I'm more forgiving of like the editing choices and like the crazy angles and the ugly lighting and whatever it is, because it does feel purposeful. It doesn't feel like you're in the hands of an amateur writer, director who just got lucky that somebody decided they wanted to make their movie. So I think that's why I'm just like more forgiving. And anybody else tried to make that movie with those images and whatever, I would roll my eyes and be like, please stop. This is the worst. But I don't. In these movies.
No, the Saw franchise is so, I want to say it's unique. And it's, first off, it's perseverance. When was the last time a franchise hit 10 entries?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
I want to say, what, Friday the 13th?
Well, I mean, if you're not talking horror, Fast and the Furious.
Sure.
Fast and the Furious is over 10 now, aren't they?
I think they're at 11 now.
Yeah.
But I think it's almost more impressive for a horror franchise because you can only do so many things,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and you can only, this is a movie predicated on the same concept of people get stuck in traps. They must escape traps.
Yeah.
And we're still getting depth in these movies, which is wild. It's wild to me that I can sit down here and feel four characters. I feel empathy for some of these characters. I feel hatred towards some of these characters. Like when the doctor kills Gabriella, mm-hmm. it is like this big remorseless moment that just feels like that's the point where it's like, you can do literally anything to this woman at this point, John Kramer, and I don't care.
Yeah. Which is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, they do a really good job of making her so horrible.
Yeah.
That you can't help but just root for her to die. I mean, it's so crazy.
Yeah, it's so impressive because in order to make John Kramer sympathetic, you have to have his, like, who he's torturing be worse than him. Mm-hmm. But she's so worse than him in one of the most realistic ways possible.
That is very true. Like, this is the type of person that you feel like is a real character. Somebody who, you know, is just stealing money. Just a thief who's making millions and millions off of other people's pain and suffering. And man, when she feels like she has the upper hand, she's so nasty and awful and all of that. But it's great because she is stupid and she is, you know, so easy to predict what her actions and movements are going to be. And I think what makes John Kramer such an interesting character and why you do feel somewhat sympathetic with him is because he does have such a clear set of rules, right? Yep. It's if you can get through it, and you choose to live, if your life is more important than whatever he's taking away from you, then he's going to let you live and you're going to get through. And you, like, he feels like he's helping people learn something, right? Where she's not, he's helping people like appreciate life. And I think that's what makes him a somewhat sympathetic character. I will say this though, Veronica, Victoria, whatever the first girl's name was, the refs screwed her. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
She did everything she needed to do. She 100% deserved to live. That was ridiculous. I was mad. She cut her leg off. She had definitely drained enough bone marrow. It should have been enough. She can't help. Like, that was not a, I don't want to do this. That was a, you probably should have given her 3.5 minutes on that one, John.
That was an equipment error.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that machine sucked just a little bit faster, she was totally fine.
So I did feel for her in a big way on that one. She got screwed. Everybody else did what they had to do. The cutting out your own brain thing was sick. That one was so good.
Yeah, it was. And then just like, even like, you couldn't tell what the trap was until right before it closed. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you see what it is, you're like, oh no, this is terrible.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
That one sucks. The radiation one sucked, but that was a cool little idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just wish I understood the very end a little bit better.
The teeter-totter was awesome. And as much as it, like, you know, didn't really pay off or whatever, just that moment of Parker being like, who was supposed to be on the other side of the teeter-totter was fantastic.
That was cool. Yeah, that was really cool. I really appreciated that. You know, again, a lot of, well, now they're going to go get the kid who's kicking the ball, and like a lot of like really knowing how somebody's going to act, which I guess is the whole point of John Kramer, right? He can predict how people are going to be. But I mean, it was an enjoyable movie for what it is. And again, I think the people in the theater with me really enjoyed it. I think, you know, after the first half hour, they got exactly what they wanted. And I got the first half hour, which made me happy because I felt like they really respected their audience more than any of these movies have probably since the first one. So yeah, this is a movie that I would definitely recommend. I probably won't ever watch it again, but it's just not really my genre, but I am happy that I went out and saw it this time. Saw it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. That's exactly how I feel about it. It's just like, is this a movie that I'm going to sit down and watch every year? No. Is it a movie I'll ever watch again? No. There's like 9 other movies in this franchise I probably should see first before I rewatch this one.
Only eight.
My apologies. 8. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, I mean, if you enjoy the Saw franchise, watch this. If you just enjoy, like, you know, good storytelling, also watch this. Like, it was a really enjoyable time. I mean, I also gave it, I think, a 2.5, but it's a movie that, like, if it was more in my genre, would have deserved a higher mark.
I agree with that. Like, I gave Last Voyage of the Demeter a half star more than this. And right now Demeter is my number 8 and Saw 10 is my number 9. Honestly, Saw 10 is probably a better made movie, but the whole slasher on a boat Dracula thing just hit me better than torture porn. Like torture porn just does do it for me. So that's where like Demeter is just more in my genre. Saw 10 is not. And that's why I put Demeter higher. But like, if you die for these Saw movies, if that's what you want, yeah, like this is your alley. It's so worth it. All right, let's move on to Ant-Man. This was a movie that ends the phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. My biggest question in the world, why is this the movie that ends phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Do you have the answer to that question?
This movie was in production since 2006.
Okay, but okay, I get that. But why did they elect to make this the one that ends phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Why because is this they wanted, phase three?
Because they wanted Captain America Civil War to be the beginning of phase three. And I can't tell you anything more than that because it would be a spoiler.
So there's so they wanted something in Captain America. It changes the tone. So like this movie, it just feels like to me, I enjoyed this movie. I did. There were certain parts where I just rolled my eyes, but a lot of really good things that we'll talk about. I just don't understand why this is the movie that follows up Age of Ultron and is considered the end of phase two. Like, why did it come in this order? Why did it not come earlier or later?
Like, why isn't it the beginning of phase three?
Or just a random movie in phase three? Like, if Doctor Strange is going to be the second movie in phase three, why couldn't this have been the third movie in phase three or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how these phases work. Logically, it would make sense to end them with an Avengers movie.
You would think, especially since you literally have back-to-back almost Avengers movies. Like, I just don't get why this falls in between. This is something I just wanted to bring up at the beginning. And if you're listening, you have the answer for this, please let me know, because I really don't understand. And I honestly don't feel like reading pages and pages of Wikipedia or anything like that.
From my understanding, this movie was supposed to come out like significantly earlier than it did. But there was a lot of behind the scene things that changed when it would be released.
Was it the fact that Peyton Reed was just living off of the Bring It On and Down With Love success for so long, he didn't want it to ever end?
No, it's because this movie started production in 2006 with Edgar Wright as the writer and director. Edgar Wright still has a writer credit on this because like most of his script, like you can tell just watching this movie, there's a lot of Edgar Wright in this movie.
Everything when Michael Peña was talking and they were doing the voiceover through other people while they were making like facial expressions, that was Edgar Wright 1000%.
There were some arguments and disagreements between Edgar Wright and Disney about how the movie should be. From my understanding, the movie was a lot more British prior to it switching over to Peyton Reed. It wasn't quite as serious. So it's probably more in vain with like his Cornetto trilogy. But it wasn't like a spoof, like a superhero movie, but it was a little more lighthearted. So I guess you could probably view it more, I don't know. I don't even know what to compare it to. But the point being is there were disagreements. Edgar Wright walked away from the project. Almost all of the actors almost quit at that time when Edgar Wright left. They stayed on. Paul Rudd helped finish, like, rewrite the script and finish the script along with Peyton Reed taking over as director. And then we got this movie.
Yeah, I like, I mean, I mean, sure.
Sure. And we got Baby Driver. And we got Baby Driver because Edgar Wright left and we got Baby Driver instead. So I'm not complaining.
No, I'm not complaining either. I currently have Ant-Man ranked as my 5th best Marvel movie. So that tells you, I mean, that tells you one, what I thought about Ant-Man, but also tells you what I think about Marvel still as a whole. But I have it as my 5th highest ranked. I have it as my highest ranked 2.5 star movie. It would have been 3, but I thought the Avengers thing was so forced the Avengers base scene and just kind of rolled my eyes at that. And it was what it was. What I did really appreciate about this movie, though, is I felt like out of all of them, and I like the Captain America movies so much more than this one, but I did feel like out of all of the movies, this had the most obvious stakes for everyone, and it didn't get muddled at any point. We understood why Scott Lang wanted to do what he wanted to do. We understood why Michael Douglas wanted to do what he wanted to do. We understood why Corey Stoll wanted to do what he wanted to do. You actually understood the motivations of all of the characters in the movie, which was a nice breath of fresh air. And it doesn't lose that throughout the movie. It tries to throw in too many random things throughout, which is kind of annoying, but it doesn't lose the motivations right up until the very end. And I really appreciated, I mean, to me, it's the best final boss fight in any of the movies I've seen so far.
It's interesting. It's done in a different way than any other ones we've seen so far.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's fun. It has stakes. You know what the stakes are, and you know the sacrifices that Scott Lang's making in that last fight. You understand the danger of that last fight and what he needs to do in order to win it.
Yeah. And he goes into his K-hole that he had to go into, and, you know, he might never come out of, but he's willing to do it for his daughter. And that's great. And what I really liked about it even more, there's no pointless robots that he fights. There's no pointless pretend bad guys. No, it's just bad. It's good guy versus bad guy. Awesome. Just do it. The humor in it was great. The train and all of that, and, you know, all the loud noises, and then they cut away, and it's like exactly what you would sound think a train would sound like if it hit a windowsill. Like, it doesn't matter. But then to have things be able to get bigger and smaller and all that, it's really fun. It's just really really fun. I wasn't digging the entire movie prior to that. I thought that it was kind of, you could, like you said, you could feel the Edgar Wright, and then the Edgar Wright would fall out for more basic stuff, and then it would come back, and then it would go away, and it would come back and go away. But the motivations were clear, and it has a really fun third act. This was closer to three than two by a lot. So I just think, like, ultimately the reason why I didn't give it three was because so much of me was wondering why I was watching this movie. But it is a pretty good movie. It is. And yeah, I thought there were some good little twists, good little moments. I like the whole paranoia of little guy. You don't know if he's there when Corey Stoll comes into the house. They don't know if he's actually heard anything else or not, because you don't really know. So yeah, I appreciated the ending the most, though. So that's what I wanted to say.
This is one of the few MCU movies that I've watched, like rewatched, since getting Letterboxd prior to this, because I rewatched all the Ant-Man movies leading up to the latest Ant-Man movie. This is the only one that I have moved up in my rankings and my rating.
Interesting.
On a rewatch. Last time I watched this, I rated it a 2.5. It's like, it's good. It's good when it's really good. There are scenes like you said, like the Avengers complex scene is not great. It's probably the lowest point of the entire movie. But when this movie is just being like a heist movie, it's fantastic. When this movie is just being like this comedic superhero movie, it's fantastic. And like you said, the third act is just so unique in comparison. I really felt the Edgar Wright a lot more on this watch. I appreciated the Edgar Wright a lot more on this watch. And it's my fourth ranked Marvel movie right now. I actually, in retrospect, moved Iron Man down, like the original Iron Man down to 3 stars and put this one above it.
Well, and you also have Thor ranked up there, right?
I do. I do.
Yeah, because I have Guardians above it.
Yeah.
The original Iron Man. Jason Obermeyer says, Phil, which of the Marvel movies would you ever go back to rewatch? I would definitely rewatch the first two Captain Americas. I did enjoy them. Those are two movies I can definitely say I enjoyed. Guardians, I would rewatch. I don't think I would like it as much on a second watch. I think I'd be much more nitpicky, so I probably shouldn't rewatch it.
Yeah.
This one I'd rewatch, and Iron Man I'd rewatch. I don't need to rewatch any of the sequels. I don't need to rewatch Thor. I don't need to rewatch The Incredible Hulk, and I don't need to rewatch any of the Avengers stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, this is one, though, I mean, I do feel like if this was on, and a lot of you who are listening might not understand what I'm talking about here, just because Sometimes I forget that people don't just put TV on anymore, and people who were born in like 2000 might not remember what it was like to just throw the TV on. But back in the day when it was really cool to have Comcast or Xfinity, whatever it was back then, or, you know, you had Dish, whatever you had, it didn't matter what you had. It used to be really cool if your parents could afford or were willing to take away your vacation money to spend the money to get HBO and Encore and Stars and Cinemax and all of that. And so it would be, if this was a movie that was just on one of those channels on a nice lazy Saturday or a lazy Sunday, or football Sunday on the East Coast starts at 1 o'clock on Sundays, and it was 10 a.m. and you're just trying to kill time, I would throw this movie comes on, I'm watching it. I'm watching it. I can't say the same for the Thor movies or the Avengers or the sequels to the Iron Mans, but this is one that I would definitely watch. So it's fun. It is fun. I think, you know, but I have to, like, when I sit here and I rank these movies, they're supposed to be fun, right? I can't just give this 3 stars because it's fun and because the characters had actual motivations. There's still so many things in this movie where I'm like, okay, but why? Like, I just can't get over the fact of, why did I watch this movie? And maybe that'll come. I'm assuming the whole Pym thing, you know, it comes and it makes sense eventually somewhere down the line. But I did just feel like if I had never watched Ant-Man, to me at this point, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is no different. And I felt like it was a way to just have a character talk about the Avengers as if they were real things.
Yeah, that's a reasonable examination to the movie, because you've mentioned it before, like Iron Man 3 and Thor the Dark World, right? Like, what are the relevance of these movies in comparison to what's just happened, right? This isn't... This loosely connects with the whole Hydra of it all. Obviously, we have that in, like, this, like, secondary villain in this movie. But it's not connected to the Infinity Saga at all. There's no connection to Thanos at all. It's a very, again, grounded movie, similar to the way that Winter Soldier was. It was more grounded than these big, large, multi-world spanning movies that we've had in contrast with this. So it does feel a little odd, especially in a chronological watch, as to why this movie is coming now. What's the reason for it to come now, especially when you put it in the context of this is the end of phase 2?
Yeah. Like, I just don't, like, and that's where I guess I was even more confused. And maybe it was just my fault because I just had something built up in my head that wasn't going to be there. But I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm watching the end of phase 2. Can't wait to see what that means. And I didn't feel like it meant anything. And maybe that's just because the phases I thought would mean something, but they don't seem like they mean anything.
I can't. There's a small... Phase 3, I think, makes a lot more sense because it essentially starts with an Avengers movie and ends with an Avengers movie.
Yeah. And that's the one that ends with Infinity War, right?
It ends with Endgame.
Endgame, sorry.
Yeah. So, like, I think that one makes a little more sense as a phase in general. And, like, Phase 1 obviously makes sense because it ends with the Avengers. Phase 2 is just it's a weird time where they're... It seems like Marvel's just kind of throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, I felt that big time. And it felt like they didn't really know what it was going to mean. So they just said, yeah, this is what phase 2 is. And, like, I wish that it meant a little bit more. And, you know, again, maybe that's just on me because I thought it was going to mean something, but it didn't. Like, you have Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, The Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man.
Yep.
One, like, you know, you'll hear that song, one of these things is not like the other. None of these things is not like the other. Like, I don't really understand why those are the 6 movies. And, you know, you're saying phase 1 makes total sense, although Iron Man 2 really probably shouldn't have even been there, right? Phase 3, maybe it will make more sense, but phase 2, it seemed like they just had to call it something, so they said, sure, it'll be phase 2. The other thing with these movies is they came out, the 6 movies came out between May 3rd of 2013 and July 17th of 2015. So a really short amount of time. I mean, Ant-Man followed up Age of Ultron by less than 3 months. So, mm-hmm. Maybe it's just they were pushing it together. And I know that phase three is even more insane because they're putting out three a year. Yeah. But I just, like, to me, it was just like, it almost felt like if you would have told me this is going to be the culmination of something, I thought it would be the culmination of something. And it didn't, like, maybe I'm just missing something, but I don't feel like it was the culmination of something. Maybe I'm getting too hung up on that nonsense. But if you're going to sell something as something, make it mean something.
Yeah. But the thing is like, the MCU doesn't mean something, right? Like, the MCU is a cash grab.
Yeah.
Like, phase two is essentially, hey, we have until this date planned out.
Yeah, that's true.
This is where the phase ends, right? I mean, even if you look at, like, phase four, which we'll eventually get to, phase four looks way weirder than phase two does.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at that now, yeah.
It's way weirder. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, these are the movies that are being released before something happens. Phase two essentially leads up to phase three in a way where it's like, it's kind of setting up our players for phase three. And it's giving us these, like, people who are going to be important in the future or play a role in the future that's really important in mm-hmm. some way or another. So, like, Ant-Man seems kind of inconsequential to everything now. I think it makes a lot more sense once we get to the end of phase three as to why this character had to be introduced prior to it starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we'll see what happens. John, did you see Jason's questions here? It's directly aimed at you. Why do you think MCU is more successful critically and commercially than DCEU?
A lot of it surrounds the fact that you can't make a good Superman movie because Superman is not a character people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
People make the mistake of making a Superman movie about Superman and not about Clark Kent.
Mm-hmm. You got to do the Batman thing.
Batman's always going to be successful by itself, but you need Batman. But, like, as soon as you add Batman to another group of characters, unless you have those characters contrasting the darkness of Batman, it doesn't work. The problem the DCEU has had is that they don't spend enough time working on character relationships, and they just kind of thrust movies together. The MCU has the same mistake. The MCU is just colorful and more accessible. People don't like seeing dark, dingy movies all the time. Warner Brothers thought they did because of how successful the Dark Knight trilogy was.
Yes. And I think what Warner Brothers missed was that a lot of that was Christopher Nolan. You know, yeah. I really do think that they missed the point of that a little bit. And Heath Ledger.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at like the turn of the century and the movies that were very, like, the comic book movies that were popular, that people were enjoying and stuff, it was a lot more Marvel content than it was DC content. And
it was much more
Marvel.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's because Marvel just has, like, more iconic characters. A lot of the DC characters, you have, like, the few iconic DC characters in, like, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Aquaman at this point, but you don't have teams. You don't have the big teams like X-Men. You don't have someone as big as Spider-Man, who is this, like, who is just such a more relatable character because he's a street-level hero. And those are the things that make the MCU so much more successful. These characters are more relatable because, for the most part, they're all humans. MCU movies also spend a lot of time looking at wealth disparity, which I don't think a lot of people miss. We haven't seen it. We don't see it a lot in the MCU movies, but, like, Marvel in general spends a lot of time doing that. Look at the villains that we have in movies, where they are. There's a lot of, like, this idea of, like, mysticism versus technology that we'll start seeing in phase three of the MCU that plays into it, where we see a lot of villains using technology. And it's very prevalent, especially in the Spider-Mans, which makes the characters a lot more relatable than the DC characters, who are dark, they're gritty, and a lot of the times they're either extraterrestrial or mythological.
Yeah. And Catherine Jessica Nadoff over here says, Marvel sucks. I do not prefer their movies. I mean, you know, that's why we're doing this podcast, is because that's what I always said. I do have another theory, though,
okay,
regarding this. And it's quite simple.
Disney? Is it the Disney of it all?
No, it's prior to that, realistically. Okay. It's Universal Islands of Adventure.
With Universal the Hulk and stuff like that.
The Hulk, Spider-Man, Storm. Yeah. It's all the Fantastic Four, you know, whatever. Doctor Doom. It is all done up also very comic booky. Mm-hmm. And it, like, the whole, I mean, it's not like Disney World where it's like this huge portion of the park, but this whole section of the park is dedicated to comic books. And yeah. Spider-Man and the Hulk are the two main ones. And where I grew up in New Jersey, we had Six Flags Great Adventure. You had Superman ride, you had Batman ride, you had Batman and Robin. But that was not a place you would travel to just to go to. That was a very northeast-centric mm-hmm. place, whereas Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure, that's a place that you would go on a vacation to. Orlando's a place you vacation. Jackson, New Jersey is not. And so I do think that had an impact. It started in 1999, and when did the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man come out? 2001. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, now you have a whole group of kids who are growing up going on rides that are based on these characters, and then they get to go watch the movies. And I think that that does make an impact, because these, you're not, you wouldn't go to Universal Studios and see Batman or mm-hmm. see Superman or Aquaman. You were going and you were seeing the Marvel characters. So I think that helped. I think that helped a little bit. I don't think it was huge, but I think it helped a little bit.
I think it's also just the appeal of these like classic comic characters. Like, I think that the Marvel characters feel more comic book.
They do.
They're colorful. Yeah. They're vibrant. They stick
out. It's a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also look at like, just from the comic book perspective, right? Look at what Marvel was kind of turning out at this point, right? Like, they just done the Ultimate run, which was like pretty popular. There was a lot of, even if you look at like video games and stuff, right? We have video games that are based on Marvel properties way more than we have on DC properties. And they're fun. Spider-Man 2 is one of the best games for PlayStation 2 ever made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And it's just, it's like those simple things where you, I think people just prefer Marvel characters for the most part than they do the DC characters. And that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah. I think it helps that there's more of them and they are more interesting. I mean, mm-hmm. that new Aquaman movie looks terrible. But then when I sit there and I look at what the new Aquaman, that it looks terrible. I'm like, well, how would they ever make it good? There's mm-hmm. no way it's ever really good. Like, it just, it looks bad because it pretty much is. Like,
yep.
What do I care? You know, and the trailer is so terribly cut. But yeah, I, you know, when the thing is too with Marvel, they did such a good job. I will say this, and I don't mean this as like they did a good job, so I need to like it. I just think they did a good job in terms of if you're going to market your movies and you're going to put them out in order, this makes sense. Mm-hmm. By the time they decide that they're going to release Ant-Man and Doctor Strange and, you know, Shang-Chi and all that, you have hit all of the characters people care about. So now in these movies, you can have other little side characters pop up or even bigger characters pop up. And now people get excited. Oh, it's happening in the same world. Mm-hmm. So it's an Ant-Man movie, but the Ant-Man movie is very much in line with Avengers stuff that is happening.
Yep.
And we get to see the Falcon and that. So that means something. Even if it's there just as a total like publicity thing, it worked. Mm-hmm. So that's just what I think is like it. They did a really good job of getting all the ones people had heard of, figuring that out, and then saying, okay, now we're going to make Ant-Man. And people go, what? There's an Ant-Man? And then you make an origin story, but you include Avengers stuff.
And I will say this, you have to keep in mind, like, these Avenger characters are still B-list characters at this point, right? Because they had sold the rights to all the A-list characters already. Because we couldn't
get the characters. Do you mean like
Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four? Like, those are the popular Marvel characters that everyone knows, especially coming out of the 90s.
Yeah,
right. Like, out of the 90s, where we had like Spider-Man series, we had X-Men series, we had Captain America series, we had Silver Surfer, we had like all those, the Iron Man series. There were so many different Marvel series coming out, and yes, obviously the 90s also had the Batman animated series, which was fantastic, but it's just not the same as it is, like, the quantity of Marvel series that were coming out. Plus, Marvel just came off of 3 X-Men movies, 3 Spider-Man movies, 2 Fantastic Four movies. Like, people already knew about Marvel. Yes, DC had the Dark Knight trilogy, but other than that, like, it's kind of starting fresh, right?
Yeah. 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 No, it's, I don't know. I don't have, like, the official answer to that, but I think John pretty much nailed a bunch of different things that add up ultimately to what it is that is separating it from DC. And DC is never going to get there. That's the biggest thing. DC will never get there, because when people get tired of Marvel, they're going to be tired of these movies in general. That's what it's going to be. They're not going to be, oh, I got to go find a different superhero franchise to watch. No, they're done.
Yeah, well, I mean, the DCEU is already up in the air with the supposed Warner Brothers sales coming anyways.
Yeah, that's true.
But back to Ant-Man, because there are some things I want to talk about. I really like the decision to focus on Scott Lang instead of Hank Pym. I think it was a very clever decision by whoever made it to avoid the character who is known to be a wife abuser as much as possible. Put him as a side character. Yes, he's present in the movie and everything, but because he's not the hero, you don't have to delve into it as much, and you don't get that backlash as much. We do get that uncanny valley of Michael at the beginning of the movie with Michael Douglas there in his de-aged form. It just looks so wrong still.
It looks so bad. Yeah, it does not look good.
No. Kind of glad we're moving away from that for the most part, unless they're replacing everyone with this AI.
Yeah.
But hopefully it doesn't come to that. This, I love the contrast of Michael Douglas being aged down and Hayley Atwell being super aged up.
I know.
Hilarious.
I know. It really is so funny. It really is. I, to the point where I didn't even realize it was Hayley Atwell at first. I was like, wait, why do I recognize her?
Yeah. Yeah, because she doesn't say anything, right? She didn't say anything. Did she say one line, maybe?
I think she has one line.
Yeah.
But it's mainly John Slattery.
Yeah. And then just, I don't know. I love the introduction of Scott. Like Scott feels, I think the casting in this movie is really well done. Michael Douglas does a really good job as, like, the mentor character. Mm-hmm. Paul Rudd does a fantastic job as Scott Lang.
Paul Rudd's great.
Balances the everyman quality and the comedy necessary to, you know, the point is, a superhero who shrinks, kind of lame. That's why they didn't want to make Ant-Man, like, a lead-off character in the MCU. Mm-hmm. But Paul Rudd performs this role so well. And just, like, balances exactly what you need to make this character someone people root for.
Yeah, I agree. I think Scott Lang is a very well done character. And the fact he's almost like a Robin Hood, right? He's stealing from the rich and he's trying to help for his daughter. And, you know, he's being misunderstood or whatever it is. I really like him. And Paul Rudd always does a good job playing this kind of, like, middleman of, you know, he's got, like, an edge to him, but he's supposed to be more serious. You know, I mean, he does it in Wet Hot American Summer and it's so overblown, but it's still very funny. Yeah. He really does balance drama and comedy very well. I mean, he was popular with Role Models and This Is 40 and things like that throughout the, you know, the 20 whatevers. Yeah. I mean, I agree too. And Michael Douglas, and we didn't talk about Evangeline Lilly at all. I think Evangeline Lilly is totally fine in the role that she's taking. I think Corey Stoll is, like, a solid one. What'd you say?
She's barely in this movie.
She is barely in it, but I mean, she's totally fine in it. You know, she doesn't do anything, like, bad, and she doesn't do anything great. She's there and she's fine. And so that's fine with me.
There's one scene where she gives this face, and it's the exact same face that she would give in Lost when she's like, okay, we're about to get, it's the scene in Lost where she's trying to get the gun from Sawyer.
Yeah.
She gives that face and you're like, I know that face. I know exactly what this character wants right now, because I have seen it before. And, like, it's kind of perfect for the character. Kind of wish she didn't have a terrible wig on the entire movie, though.
Yeah. I do agree. Her hair is awful. And they show the one picture of her younger or whatever she's supposed to be, and her hair is long and normal. I'm like, why couldn't she just look like that the entire movie?
Yeah. I do agree. Corey Stoll's great in this movie. And this is, because this would have been what, like right after season one of House of Cards?
I
guess that's the only season he's in that show.
No, because this House of Cards was when I was in college. So this was before that, because House of Cards, okay, I was in college for, and this came out in 2015. So this was when Corey Stoll was kind of starting to fall off a little bit, because he had done Midnight in Paris in 2012 or 2011, whatever that was. And then he had done House of Cards
was 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it was being shot around that time, but he never became as big as he should have.
No, he's a great actor. We've talked about him many times on this podcast.
Yeah, he really, really is.
The other thing I really want to highlight in this that I think is really done, just before we close, I really like the depiction of family dynamics in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not just like the Hank and why can't I remember Evangeline Lilly's character's name?
The Wasp.
The Hope and Hank dynamic of it all, but I really like the dynamic between Scott and his wife and Peyton. I really appreciate that, like, Peyton as a police officer is like approaching the situation like you can't drop by, but he's like never a dick about it at all. He's not like the, like, ooh, here's the evil stepdad.
It feels authentic trying to protect your daughter, your stepdaughter.
Yeah, he just feels like a guy trying to do the right thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And while we as an audience know Scott's also trying to do the right thing, we can see where the difference in opinion is. And like at the end of the movie, when you have them all sitting together as a family meal, like it's a good feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have an aunt now as a dog.
Yes, that too. Well, that's what happens when you accidentally grow an aunt.
Yeah, that disturbed me a lot, but
yeah, that's fair.
I'm out, John, unless you got anything else.
That's all I've got.
Cool. Yeah, Ant-Man's pretty good. Number 5 for me right now, number 4 for John. It doesn't say much, but it tells you that we actually both enjoyed this one. So next week we're going to do Captain America Civil War, and we're going to do Killers of the Flower Moon. So go find 4 hours, because remember, you got to watch previews and stuff too. Go find 4 hours to sit down at the theater and enjoy a movie this weekend. And we'll be back. It won't be next Wednesday because I'm working, but it'll either be Monday or Thursday. Probably Monday. We just have to completely confirm that. But John and I will be back at some point next week talking about those two movies. Kind of a shame that right before Halloween, we don't have a Halloween movie, but Killers of the Flower Moon is much more important, and there's no horror coming out. Killers of the Flower Moon is the only movie getting wide release this week.
Yeah. We have to wait till the week after before another like horror movie comes out.
And what's the week after?
5 Nights at Freddy's?
Oh, yeah. God. I'm at the point where I don't want to watch it because I've seen the trailer so many damn times. But
I know.
Anyway, thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you probably Monday night talking about 6 hours of movies and 3.5 of that is from one. Bye, everyone.